This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
We're back. Welcome to Music for Life, Music from DePauw. This week, the first show of the spring semester, we'll preview our guest artist of the semester. We interview student percussionist Josiah Rushing about his semester abroad. Orsineth Smith joins us to discuss the orchestra's winter term tour to London and our opera this semester. We'll talk with Craig Paré about an exciting new opportunity for area high school musicians. And we'll chat with opera director Joachim Schomburger about this year's opera production, Johann Strauss's Die Fledermaus. There are lots of exciting things happening in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad to be back with you on Music for Life. This is another exciting semester coming up here in the DePauw School of Music as we have, once again, some remarkable guest artists on their way to town. First up in February will be the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, which we're pleased to welcome to campus once or twice each year. This time they're coming with the famous American baritone Thomas Hampson. Now, Thomas Hampson is one of the major names in classical music today. He's really a remarkable ambassador of song. He's an opera singer. He's a recording artist. He's busy in research and education, technology. I was reading about him giving a master class on an iPhone the other day. He's really a remarkable individual and has an incredible instrument, and will be singing an evening of song with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra here in February. And what's really exciting about that for us is that Thomas happens to be good friends with one of our faculty members, also one of our alumni, Pamela Coburn, who graduated from DePauw and is teaching here. And the two of them performed regularly in Europe, and she was our ticket into attracting Thomas to come here and to perform and to do a master class. So we kick off the semester in February with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra and Thomas Hampson. That's going to be an amazing evening of music. And then we follow up in March with the internationally known trio Time for Three. They refer to themselves as the world's first classically trained garage band, and I think that's aptly put. This is Zach Depew, violin, who happens to be the concertmaster in the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra as well, and Nick Kendall on violin, and Renan Meyer, double bass, which has to be the strangest trio instruments, two violins and a double bass. And they address that. They say, why two violins and a double bass? We have no idea. We were just good friends. They actually played together in grad school at Curtis. They loved their experience working together, and they decided that they would form a group. And they've been commissioning composers to write for this set of instruments. They play a wide range of music. They cover pop tunes and rock tunes, but they also do a lot of classical music. They do bluegrass. It's really an amazing evening of fiddling and great music from several genres. And then the final concert of our guest artist series is the Canadian Brass, the most famous brass quintet in the world. The Canadian Brass, really quite amazing group. They've been around for 40 or more years. But interestingly, they've turned over recently. So as the original guys in the Canadian Brass retired and moved on to other things, they've held auditions, and people auditioned from around the world to be a part of this group. And now they're amazingly young folks. So this is really remarkable. With the exception of Chuck Dahlenbach, who's the tuba player and the founder of the group, the rest of them are new guys. Absolutely amazing talent, and they are terrific examples for our students as to what you can do with your musical career after your life in the practice room here at DePauw. And so that will be our final performance of the year. These guys play an incredible range of music. They put on concerts that are musically rewarding and challenging, but also funny and fun, and it's a great evening of great music. So that's three great concerts in the 3 months of our spring semester. We've got Thomas Hampson and the ISO in February. We have Time for Three in March, and then we have the Canadian Brass in April. And as the season rolls on, we're going to delve into each of these concerts in detail, but we hope that you'll look us up on the web. Get your tickets now. We expect these to be very hot tickets in town, and look forward to some really great music from our guests, as well as the great music we always expect from our students and faculty.
¶¶ Hi, this is Joachim Schamberger, DePauw Opera's director.
And this is Orsina Smith, DePauw's opera conductor.
Do you know what happened at the Boulder?
Well, we want everybody to find out and join us for DePauw Opera's new production of Debat, February 7th through the 10th in Moor Theater.
We have transformed Johann Strauss's famous Viennese operetta, Die Fledermaus,
which translated means the bat,
to celebrate DePauw University's 175th anniversary, bringing the story up to date right here in Greencastle.
Now called Debat, the show is great fun, and we invite you to attend to see the special alumni twist on this great plot.
Tickets can be purchased at the Green Center box office. Don't miss it. February 7th through the 10th at Moor Theater, when the Batman
gets his revenge.
This year was the first ever DePauw University Honor Band. And here to tell us what that is and to discuss it with me is our director of bands, Dr. Craig Paré. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark.
So this was an exciting winter term for us.
It was. Very first time putting together an honor band where directors nominated their students to be part of a select group that would work toward a performance over a course of 2 days.
These things always amaze me because they're 2 days from the minute you first meet them till they put on a concert, and the pressure is on.
Mm-hmm.
And they really rose to that pressure this year.
They did. The directors chose good kids, and it was easy to work with them. I chose music that was a little more of a stretch than I normally program for honor bands because I wanted them to feel that they had to work a little harder, a variety of styles, more notes, I mean, a number of different things that
right.
we really try to make sure that we're challenging them rather than reading music and comfortably playing within the first couple of hours.
Right. And one of the exciting things about the DePauw University Honor Band is that the students have kind of a side-by-side experience, the high school students, that is, in that we actually had a few of our own folks come in and serve as ringers. So folks from the DePauw University Band.
We did, because of the vagaries of winter term obligations, whether internships or tours or anything else that students might be involved with. There are often a number of students around on campus that are either taking courses here or commuting to internships. And we had a number here that were sitting in with the group.
Winter term at DePauw is this month of January between the fall semester and the spring semester, in which students do a host of different things. Sometimes they're taking classes on campus, sometimes they're traveling abroad or touring or whatever the case may be. And we took advantage of that time when the concert halls were open to host these folks. So you guys got to rehearse on the Kresge stage the entire time. And then some of our students who were here on campus had the opportunity to come in and kind of serve as role models. Now, that's had to be interesting for our own students as well, to switch from, typically when we think of a side-by-side, we think of us sitting next to professional musicians as college musicians. Here, we were kind of the professionals with high school students. How'd that go over?
Very well. I picked music that I don't think most of the college students knew either. So they found that they had to read and work at a high level. But also, I saw them occasionally looking around and kind of seeing that they, that the students were turning to them for ideas or for the discipline of as a rehearsal would wear on, are they still staying with it? And they did. So it was a good challenge for them, but I admire them not only for all the time they put in, because they were there every moment that the students, the high school students were rehearsing.
This is two straight days. So they were here from the minute you guys started on Saturday morning until the concert on Sunday afternoon. And for college kids to give up that much time to sit in a high school rehearsal like that, I mean, I was really proud of our guys. They played beautifully, but they were also really great role models. And not just during rehearsals. It was really cool to see them after rehearsal. Well, here's where you can put your horn, or here's where we go to eat, or here's where your hotel room is. You know, students helping each other out. And I came in for one of the meals, and I was sitting at a table, and I overheard, as I was coming up to the table, I overheard two of the high school kids saying, man, this is really cool, talking about the person in their section. That was from our university band. So it was a great experience for them as well. And then we had a great crowd. That was another thing that surprised me.
A wonderful surprise, yes. Community members, not just parents, but people from the area that were curious about this performance.
Right. It's often hard for us to get an audience in January because there are no very few students on campus. And it's outside of our typical rhythm. Everyone expects us to be here in February and get things going. But in January, so we put this together and I thought, boy, I sure hope for the band that, you know, we have a nice audience. And I got, wow, where did all these folks? And then it wasn't just folks. It wasn't just parents. It was community people. A lot of folks had come around. And to see how far those guys had come in such a short period of time. This is also tricky for you because there's only so much time they can keep the horns to their heads, right?
There is. Finding ways to rehearse, to teach, but beyond the way they normally learn each day. Advanced honor bands can be the most challenging, not just for choosing good literature, but How do you choose to teach them and to bring them along at a high level of musicianship while, yeah, saving chops, while balancing and basically stretching out their time so they're learning both intellectually and with the horns on their face?
Right.
And that can be a real challenge, and I wasn't sure what to expect this time. I knew the literature would be a challenge for them, and I've done enough honor bands where there are good things to be able to teach without mm-hmm. literally playing all the time.
Right.
But this group, they were like sponges. Everything I tried, everything I experimented with, they took and made it their own.
Yeah, and I think some of our listeners may be surprised to know that for brass players in particular, it's challenging to have enough muscles in your face to mm-hmm. play that instrument for that period of time. So oftentimes in an honor band, you're looking at a conductor and you're thinking, well, what they're thinking is just about the music and the score. Mm-hmm. But actually, when you're in an honor band situation, you're thinking a lot more than that. You're thinking, okay, how much more can I get out of this section before right. they're so chop fatigued that they can't play anymore? And how do I pace this to keep it interesting? Because those guys were in rehearsal like, what, 14 hours or something like that?
A little more than
yeah.
that.
Oh, yep. More than that, yeah. So it's hard to believe that, you know, everyone talks about high school kids these days, but, you know, and their attention spans and all that. But these guys were focused and concentrating for hours and hours on end. And then the hardest part was the very last thing. They had to put the concert on after their chops are tired.
That's
and
right.
Been through the whole thing. And, of course, they got to stay here on campus, and it's a beautiful campus. And many of them drove quite a ways to get here, and it was good to see their folks here. And they could get a CD or a DVD of the performance. So I'm sure that it was a memorable experience for them mm-hmm. as much as it was for us. And we're hoping this is the first of many.
Yes. Annual event that the teachers know and can count on is going to happen each year. And as their students graduate, as they go from freshmen to seniors and they have new students come in that would enjoy this challenge, those will be the students they'll continue to nominate. So it's not only bringing those teachers and their students back, but reaching out a little bit farther and bringing in teachers and students that might not normally stop by DePauw, not normally know our program or have worked with us or know our facilities, mm-hmm. just for a difference in terms of an honor band itself.
Right. So it's a great experience for us at DePauw and for our students, and it's a really great experience for high school students to be able to work with our own professors and to have that experience. And thank you for making it happen this year.
You're welcome.
From the Producer's Vault, here's a performance from November 18th, 2012, of the DePauw University Band under the direction of Professor Craig Paré, of Luis Serrano Alarcón's Tramonto, featuring cello soloist Professor Eric Edberg. Thank you. This is Matthew Champagne, producer of Music for Life. We received word that the radio program Wind and Rhythm will be featuring a recording of the DePaul University Band under the direction of Professor Craig Paré, performing DePaul faculty member Jim Beckel's piece, The Glass Bead Game. If you'd like to tune in to a broadcast, the main page of their website, www.windandrhythm.com, lists airtimes and stations, some of which offer live streaming for listeners outside their broadcast radius. This week's episode, number 220, will be available on their website a few days after airing. Visit www.windandrhythm.com and click on the Past Episodes link at the top of their webpage for that and other episodes. Congratulations to Professors Paré and Beckel and the University Band.
We're here interviewing a soon-to-be famous percussionist who's actually a student here at DePauw, Josiah Rushing. Welcome.
Thank you.
Josiah is a remarkable performer. In fact, so much so that last year when Joseph Schwantner was here, after Josiah performed, Joseph Schwantner walked up to him and said, "Count on me for a reference anywhere you're applying for school." So it was really quite a remarkable performance. And that was my second semester at DePauw. And then my third semester at DePauw as dean, Josiah wasn't here because he was off in France.
Yes.
Many of our students have this opportunity to go study abroad. And you spent an entire semester in France, correct?
Yes, I did.
So what were you doing?
I was with a program called Academic Programs Abroad, or APA. And with this program, they have courses within their own program, such as a French language course, but also courses like theater and history of art. And then also they allow the opportunity for you to take courses with an actual French university in the city. In my situation, I was also able to take private lessons with a teacher of my choice.
And so who did you take lessons with?
Eric Samut. He is a percussionist with the National Symphony Orchestra in Paris. And he's also a famous internationally known marimbist.
Right. So this is a really remarkable opportunity for you.
I mean, yes,
not only do you get to go to a new country and you get to study in another university, but you also get to study with really remarkable musicians in their own right.
Yes.
Did you spend most of your time on marimba?
Yes. All of our time was on marimba.
All of your time?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So you've come back a marimba monster.
I don't know about that, but I'm on my way, hopefully. So.
And were your lessons in French?
Yes. Well, the first two were in English, and then I think the program found out they were in English, so they switched them to French, so I made sure he was speaking in French.
There you go.
Because he was very eager to practice his English as well as I was my French.
Right. So maybe he could have used English and you could have used French. That
would
have been just fine.
Yeah.
So how's your French?
It's better than before.
Yeah, it does really improve when you're, you know, you can't go to the grocery store. I mean, there's everything you do is in French.
Right.
That immersion is so important in your ability to speak. But it is also interesting that even though there's this language difference, there really is no difference in the musical world.
Right.
You know, you can study with a French musician, a German musician, an English musician. It doesn't matter. It's all music. And, and so did he give you some good insight, and did he change your perspectives on marimba playing?
Yes, he did. Technique-wise, he helped me find some new ways to be more relaxed and more comfortable behind the instrument. And also just ways to listen to myself as a soloist and preparing music and thinking about music that I'd played before in a different way.
Right. How'd you find time to practice? And
I had,
where?
That was challenging, and it had to be arranged before I got there. Eric Samut helped me a lot with finding an instrument, and I actually rented his own personal marimba.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah, it was really nice. The program helped me find a host family that had enough room for a marimba.
Wow.
So I was able to practice at my home.
Isn't that terrific?
So it was a perfect situation.
Wow.
It couldn't have been better.
And how long were you there? 3 months?
About 3.5.
3.5 months.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And then right after that experience, you come back and you go on tour.
Yes.
In fact, you didn't even rehearse with the orchestra really during the season because they were here and you were there.
Right.
And then when you got back, they had a few rehearsals and off to Europe, you went again.
Right, right.
So you've been crossing the Atlantic quite a bit.
Yes, I enjoyed it very much.
How was your transition back into the orchestra? Did that work out okay? You didn't have much time to learn the lit.
No, I did some listening before the couple first rehearsals, but it was an interesting transition because it had been a while since I had been able to play music with other people.
Right.
And that was something that I really missed that semester being abroad. Even though I I loved getting to focus on my solo repertoire. It's something that I really miss playing, especially in chamber situations. Mm-hmm. So it was a perfect transition to come back to after doing solo stuff and transitioning back to a regular intense DePauw semester.
Right. So you leave France, you come in, you have a few weeks in Indiana, and mm-hmm. then you head back to England.
Right.
And then you're on tour in England, and mm-hmm. then you fly back from the experience of playing as a chamber musician in a chamber symphony, and now you're in the pit. Is that correct?
Yes.
So yes. You're now in the opera.
Right.
So never a dull moment. The grass is not growing under your feet.
Right.
How's the opera coming together?
It's going very well. We had our first full ensemble rehearsal yesterday with the singers as well, and it's going very well. So yeah. I'm looking forward to the final product and also just the process of us growing as an ensemble.
Has the transition back to the college life in America gone smoothly?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. Because it is a little strange at first. Yeah. First of all, it's a little strange getting used to the Europeans and then and mm-hmm. their way. And then, you know, everything is so different. Though. Just shopping at a grocery store is so different. And then to come back and now you're back into the DePauw bubble and and things are happening.
Right.
So you've spent a semester in France. What was your favorite moment?
One being musically, and that was the first lesson I had with Eric Samut. And I first met him 2 years ago, and the first moment I had seen him in France for after those 2 years was kind of a magical moment because mm-hmm. it was kind of just like the light from heaven shining down on his face. I was like, oh my gosh, I get to spend a semester with him. And so that was really cool, starting the semester with him. Mm-hmm. And then the second moment was the very last night I was in France. And my host sister threw a Christmas party, and so there were a lot of her friends there. And during that night, I had never spoken French like that before, and I really could see the improvement that I had made throughout the entire semester
on
that one night, and it was magical. So
yeah, that's the value of truly being in country for that length mm-hmm. of time, and being surrounded by native speakers, and you learn exponentially there.
Yes.
So both musically and linguistically, you've grown a lot. Well, congratulations on your many successes. As I said in the introduction, I'm sure that we're all going to know your name. You do great work, and you work very hard at it, and I'm sure that we'll always be proud to have you associated with us, and we're proud of your good work and glad you could come in to chat about it.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
We're thrilled that we're just a few days away from this year's production of the DePauw Opera. And we were fortunate last year in that we brought in an amazing guest director who really took our opera to new heights. And we were even more thrilled to find out we could arrange that again this year. So joining me in the studio to talk about this year's production is our returning guest opera director, Joachim Schomburger. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
It's good to have you here. We're so glad you're back.
I'm very happy to be back too.
How do you fit us in? You're always somewhere. So now where are you off to next?
Next, I'll be back to Germany. And then probably China. And there's a production I'm doing with a violinist in Norway.
We're very fortunate to snag a little bit of your time and to ground you here in Indiana so that you can take us through our new production. And last year we were thrilled with the efforts with the Briton, and this year it's Johann Strauss.
Yes, this year it's Johann Strauss, the Fledermaus.
Yes, this is great fun.
It's a great, great piece.
Now, the Fledermaus is a famous operetta. Everyone loves it. It's full of great tunes. The Viennese went nuts for it. But our version is slightly different.
It is slightly different.
Music is the same.
You will hear all the tunes you may know, all the famous waltzes, beautiful, funny pieces in an English translation. We do it in English. However, the plot is slightly changed, not so much in its essence, but very much in its time and place.
This one is not set 100 years ago. This one is set
now, and actually 25 years ago.
Right. Starts 25 years ago and comes to the present, and it all hooks around the celebrations that we have here at DePauw. We just had 150th celebration 25 years ago, and now we've just completed our 175th anniversary celebration. So you've ingeniously woven that into the texture of the opera.
Yeah, I always felt like this story is so timeless. And in fact, showing it in modern times would be actually very interesting, because this is what it was in the original when people saw it in Vienna in the 19th century. That's where it takes place. So it was very close to them. Mm-hmm. To show something that's close to us would mean now and here.
Right.
So we placed it now and here. And with the 175th anniversary, I thought that would be, with all the parties around that and all the celebrations, the second act being a big celebration and party act, I felt that was like kind of the center around which I put the show.
This is brilliant on a lot of levels, but one of the things that I really appreciate about it is that some people look at classical music and opera and that kind of thing as a type of museum. And I have always looked at it more as a mirror, that it was, when it was written, it was reflective of the time. So for us to present it in this dusty old way, maybe we're not doing it quite the service that it deserves. And the fact is that this was cutting edge. This was right up to the moment when it was written, and you've brought it back to that, because here it is set in DePauw. And in fact, we have a very famous thing here at DePauw. You can look it up on our website, but it's the Boulder, the Boulder. Mm-hmm. And the Boulder is sitting outside of East College. It's been here forever. And the Boulder features prominently in our production, doesn't it?
It sure does. The idea with the Boulder being an essential part in it came from the fact that the original story starts out with a prank. Eisenstein puts his friend out drunk after a party. And dressed like a bat, exactly. And that triggers the whole rest of the story. And it's something that we often don't quite see or forget about it in the original production. So not only did I want to show it, and we will show it, but I thought, where would that take place here? So obviously, 25 years ago at the 150th anniversary, we see that story happening to friends, and the place where he puts him out at night is the Boulder.
Oh, the Boulder. And that's so perfectly DePauw. Now, if you've worked a Marvin's cheeseburger into this, I'm going to be amazed. But there's so many things that are quintessentially DePauw, and the Boulder is that. Marvin's cheeseburgers are another, but that's down another path. In the original, Eisenstein puts his friend out drunk, dressed like a bat, leaves him out. That happens for us on the Boulder. And then it weaves around DePauw in a lot of other ways. And part of what's great about having you here is your work with projections. I understand you've got a few tricks up your sleeve with some of those projections that are kind of DePauw-centric as well.
Yes, I've been using projections a lot in my shows, and of course it helps a lot trying to recreate locations, original locations that people are very familiar with, mm-hmm. because you want to recognize them immediately and you want to get a feel of, oh, this is where we are. And of course, the projections help a lot with that. So we do have original replica of the Boulder. we have projections of the East College and other places on the Great Hall here and the Green Center that people will actually walk through before they enter the theater, and then we'll see that same place again.
Yeah, so it'll be very familiar to those of us here on the DePauw campus and those folks who come to visit. It'll be almost surreal in that you've walked through the Great Hall to come to see a production that takes place in the Great Hall. So that will be terrific fun.
And not only for people of the university, it's also Green Castle. The third act that originally takes place at the prison here takes place at the courthouse.
The courthouse downtown. Steps right downtown, right?
So it all fits perfectly.
Right. And of course, there are great bells and whistles, and this is a fun story to tell, but the people come to the opera for the music. And this is just full of great music. And you've got a great cast.
We have a wonderful cast. We have two different casts like that each will perform two nights. The students did a wonderful job. It's demanding music. It's easily perceived as, oh, it's operetta, it's light. Yeah, but for it to appear light, it's really
hard
work.
It's very challenging. It sure is.
And they have spoken dialogues in between, and they're doing a fantastic job.
And you guys have been working really hard on this for quite some time. Once again, during winter term at DePauw, that's the month of January, where we're not in regular classes. The semester starts the last week of January or the first week of February. And in that interim slot, people are touring or they're taking courses or whatever. You guys are rehearsing an opera.
Yes, we were here, and we rehearsed every day, basically, almost 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, this is not easy work. You know, people think, oh, those opera singers, you carry them around on a pillow. No, here they're working very hard. And of course, for you, you're here even longer than that because you're here before and after and all the planning that goes on as well.
Right.
It's going to be an exciting production. And I have snuck in and listened to a few of the rehearsals, and I'm excited. This is going to be quite fascinating. I'm really looking forward to it on a host of levels. I remember last year, there was this great moment in the opera, and for those of you who saw it, I'm sure you'll recall this, as it would be memorable for all of us. But there's a conversation going on at the table, and there's a projection going on behind them, and as the scene progresses, the projection is the Da Vinci Christ at the Last Supper, and momentarily all the actors assume the poses of the picture behind them, and it was just priceless. You could slowly hear the audience getting it. You know, it took mm-hmm. a few moments for, which is one of the great things you can do with projection that you wouldn't yes, might be may able to.
It's true. This year we're using it a little more in a realistic style to set up the locations with fewer and telling transitions, like the travel from Falke, from now living in New York, coming back to Green Castle and things like that. So it'll be a little more the feeling of maybe a sitcom, mm-hmm. also in the style that we approached it. So I think it'll be very accessible to an audience. And from an educational point of view, I think it was also very accessible to our performers, because it's something that is also closer to them and to their approach. And the whole story, I have to say, like, it's very interesting to see it out of its original time and to see like how exciting it is, and also risque at times.
Yeah.
So, right, which exactly. We easily forget when we see it as a costume
stilted
piece.
Stilted old
removed,
costume piece, right.
And
exactly.
Now we see, like, oh, wow, this is going on here. This is quite right. funny and quite, yeah.
Yeah. And it's very much slice of life for us here at DuPont and Greencastle and in the 21st century. So, it's a wonderful telling. It's beautiful music. And one of my favorite things about this opera is it really matters not what your experience with opera is. If you've never seen an opera, you will love this opera. If you are a great opera fan, you will love this opera. I mean, this is one of those timeless operas that speaks to everybody. The music is so accessible and so beautiful. And so whatever your preconceived notions of opera might be, this is an event not to miss. And here at DePauw, because we're a totally undergraduate institution, we're very much about giving our undergraduates some incredible experiences. We double cast the opera. So it happens four times, and each cast gets two times at it. What's exciting about this is you can come to the opera two times and see almost a different opera, you know, because the little inflections and the way that different actors realize their characters, it comes to life in an entirely different way.
It's true. It's like when you love your sitcom, your favorite sitcom, you watch the same episodes twice, only there you watch the exact same thing. Here you can see the same episode with two different casts. It's actually interesting.
It should be great fun. Well, thanks for coming in to talk about it. We're glad you're back with us, and we look forward to your good work.
Thank you.
So the performances will be Thursday night, February 7th at 7:30, Friday, February 8th at 7:30, Saturday, February 9th at 7:30, and then on Sunday at 2 p.m. for the final performance. Sunday, February 10th, 2 p.m., the final performance of this wonderful Strauss opera here at DePauw.
Sind sie mit dem Profil in
Winter term at DePauw is a number of things to a number of different students, but we're thrilled that this year, winter term at DePauw included the return to touring of the DePauw Chamber Symphony. We're thrilled that they were abroad this year, and here to chat with me about it is their conductor, Orsina Smith. Welcome.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good. Back over jet lag.
Yeah, finally over, because you walked back in and then started conducting the next day.
Yeah.
I remember you walked into my office and I said, okay, is it morning or night?
I didn't remember at that time. I do now.
So, and it was cold too.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us where you went.
Well, the planning that went into this suggested that we see how many different parts of England we could actually get to, but it ended up being a hub and spoke idea where we resided in London for the entire length of the 8 nights that we were there. And then we were able to play several concerts in London, concerts in Oxford and in Bath, and then be able to sightsee some outside of London proper and within London. So I think it was a good balance of things, and according to the students, they really enjoyed all those aspects.
So it was 4 separate concerts.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things that go into this process. First of all, the students are in a new country, and in this case, on a new continent as well, and you want to give them time to be tourists. You want them to be able to see some things, but at the same time, it's a concert tour. So there's this fine balancing act between how much time performing and how much time sightseeing. How'd that work out?
Well, I think those of us that plan tours, and you've done a lot of these tours also, is the measure in which you place the concerts within the context of the number of days that you're going to be there. And I prefer doing more concerts than fewer because I like to keep the eye on the prize.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to
mm-hmm.
keep the students focused. So that worked out pretty well. We played a concert not the first day that we arrived, but the next day. So we played Saturday and Sunday, and then we had a day off for sightseeing in London, so we didn't have to travel too far. And then we did concerts on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then did some sightseeing again on Thursday. Wrapped around those other concert days, however, was sightseeing in the morning in the city or the afternoon where we might be doing the concert in the evening. So we packed a lot in.
Yeah, and you were in some really beautiful places and some interesting places. You were out at Stonehenge.
Right, we went to Stonehenge. It was absolutely beautiful there. The fog had descended and everything was crystalline, frozen.
What time did you get there?
Oh, 9:30. Yeah.
So it was just that doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
It was very bizarre.
Yeah.
and the kids were a little, they were freezing, quite frankly, and then they kind of managed to get out of their sleep deprivation, perhaps, and wander around and take pictures. And they're very protective of Stonehenge now, not the students, but the heritage sites suggest mm-hmm. that people can't walk amongst the stones anymore.
Yeah, there's now the little rope around it, so you can't get in.
But it was still aesthetically very powerful.
It is kind of disappointing when you get there and you're held back at a distance. But at the same time, it's awe-inspiring, and it is very otherworldly.
It's really hard to figure out how they put it together, what with the tools that they might have had
mm-hmm.
at the time.
Then you also got to see some great places in London and mm-hmm. in Bath, mm-hmm. and you also got to play in some great places.
Right. Our sightseeing was essentially Stratford-on-Avon when we arrived, so we got a chance to see Anne Hathaway and Shakespeare's home. Then we went to St. Paul's on the first day that we performed. We performed at the Center for Young Musicians, which is run by the Guildhall School.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a noontime concert in which One orchestra actually came and saw us rehearsing and getting ready as we were adjusting to the performance space, so it was 11-ish or so. And then we actually played the concert at noon or thereabouts for a different set of students and parents. So St. Paul's kind of was the sightseeing prior to that, and then we took a bus tour around the city and really got a good orientation. The next day, we went out to Hampton Court Palace and got a chance to see how the royalty lived. Mm-hmm. And then we played a charity concert for a Ugandan music school, the Kampala Music School. We played at St. John's Waterloo, which is just across the Thames on the south bank. And that was a very powerful experience because the students realized that the people that were there had a mission in mind for why they were listening, that they wanted to donate to an important pedagogical enterprise for young children in Uganda.
And it's always great when we're able to combine our efforts with the efforts of others. So here we are helping musicians, young musicians in Uganda by this performance. That's very moving.
Well, and I encourage the organizers of the event to, of course, be in touch with Brian Casey and you, Dr. McCoy, about the possibility mm-hmm. for future ways of raising money or awareness for that particular enterprise, the Kampala Music School in Uganda. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The people there were very, very nice. They were actually selling wares, African-made things at intermission, so some of our students purchased those things, and I think there was a great appreciation of that. And the performance was encored several times, so it was very exciting. And it was a proper understanding step for the students that the previous day they had gotten on their land legs to be able to play their first concert. And I think that they recognized after the second concert that, yes, they can and could play better. They were understanding what they were doing even better, working through jet lag, different food, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so it gives you a real appreciation for the Yo-Yo Ma's of the world, you know, who, what country am I in and when does the concert start? And
I think that that was a good jumping off point. The kids felt good about that. It was a very different acoustic, very reverberant as opposed to the first day, which was very dry. So then we embarked on the sightseeing on Monday. The kids had some free time after some organized sightseeing, and they made their way to various places and got used to operating on the tube. Mm-hmm. The travel company gave them a day pass.
Mind the gap.
Mind the gap. Tuesday we got up and traveled to Oxford and had walking tours, saw the Roman baths, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then we played a concert in Christ Church Cathedral, Oxford. Mm-hmm. And we had alumni that were at that performance. One was actually in the university orchestra back in the 80s. Her name was Rebecca Sensenbaugh. And we had another DePauw grad from the 1960s who actually teaches in Oxford who came to the performance.
Yeah, and this really amazing about DePauw that, you know, we can send out an email and say, we're coming to whatever X country. And there are DePauw grads there who are like, well, I'm going to bring some of my friends to the concert.
So that was a very amazing circumstance because that church had been there since quite a long time ago, maybe the 12th century. And the colleges had kind of grown up around that. So we were fascinated by the age of that. And the kids, once again, played well. It seemed as though we were playing for an aristocratic household. There were few seats, and they were all filled, and the people were very intent. And mm-hmm. it was in a unique transept part of the church. So the tour company had really found some very wonderful places for us to play. The next day we got up, did go to Stonehenge, then arrived in Bath and went to see the Roman baths. And it was brutally cold all those days, probably 28, 29, and the students were just wrapped in scarves and overcoats. And we usually traveled in our concert dress so we could just go immediately to the concert side and play. But, it, you know, the 3 hours of being out in the brutal cold, it did something to the orchestra. Maybe it sapped their nervous energy or something. So they were very calm when they seemed to play. And the concert in Bath was for a hospice. Mm-hmm. And we were honored to be able to play that concert. And that also went extremely well. The audience just wouldn't go away. And I kept encoring. And then I had to say, thank you very much, but our contract is up.
Yes, right. Yeah. I remember that happening to me in Spain after playing everything we had in the book, every encore we knew. I had to just walk out, look at them and say, no mas. No, you know, we've got, you've heard everything we know. What great experiences. And the fact that, you know, it was really brutally cold, the students going through that pretty significant weather challenge, but still being able to perform in so many great venues and for so many good causes. And one of my favorite things about touring is that you never bring home the same group you left with. They've come together and they are performing in a completely different way because they can repeat the literature rather than put it together for a single concert. And one of the pieces that you guys got to play again and again, and you still have four more performances of, is the overture to our opera right around the corner.
Die Fledermaus.
So you guys walked right out of one thing into another. I mean, you literally came back, had a couple of days to figure out what time it was, and then jumped right back into the opera.
Yeah, I think our planning was that we would get the overture taken care of early in the first semester, get that ready to play, do it on tour, and then we could focus on the singers when we got back. And so we've been working on all those musical numbers and really haven't touched the overture yet since we've gotten back, but we will tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't think it needs any more rehearsal now. You've played it so many times. It's been, you could probably play it without the stands at this point, which is a really...
Well, that's an idea.
Yeah, there you go. There's an experience. So how's the opera going?
Well, Joachim Schomburger's put together a wonderful elision of ideas of the old and the new, and it's quite fascinating as it's coming together. What goes on with the singers and the orchestra at this time in the process is that the orchestra, of course, is now in the pit, and though they've been rehearsing other places, they have to adjust to that very different acoustical placement. As well, the sections are sitting in different places in the pit, not at the usual orchestra setup. They're following the conductor and they're listening to the singers. As I've said to them, my objective is to turn the opera over to you as the orchestra, and you need to enjoy the art of accompanying the singers. So we've put all the rubatos in place. The students have marked their music to know where those places are. We've maintained the same tempos from the very beginning, having marked what the tempos are, and those are the practice tempos and those are the performance tempos, etc. So the enterprise is built on these building blocks, and the orchestra will catch up to where the singers are, because the singers have had the wonderful opportunity to work with Amanda Hobson and John Klodfelder, along with Joachim, in being able to put the various musical pieces of the puzzle together. And so there were piano repetitions. Now the orchestra will gather speed and catch up, and I think the result will be wonderful.
Yeah, there's some exciting times in store. Busy time for the orchestra over winter term, now jumping right into the opera and then on to many great things. Thanks for coming in to chat about
Thank you.
Wrapping up the show with an item from the Producer's Vault, here's the DePaul University Chamber Symphony under the direction of Professor Orsineth Smith from their January 9th, 2013 London Tour Preview Concert, performing the overture to Johann Strauss's Die Fledermaus.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. Our student producers are Adam Luman, Anna Gatdula, and Matthew Skiba. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced and recorded by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week. Thank you.
It's music for life.